I think traditionally, like, Ireland had those, like, the social spaces where, like, the post office, the bank, the market,
yeah,
the church, like, and the pub were the places where, like, mm-hmm. people went to socialize. And all of those places, for various reasons, are not doing as well as they used to be, you know? But that kind of social currency that Irish people have that want to spend all the time, and I'm not talking about money, I'm just like, they want to get out and talk to people. That's still there. Oh, like, it's the cheesiest thing ever, but, like, that's why I work in coffee. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm interested in coffee and different varietals and origins and, you know, equipment and machinery and all that, but, like, the social payback you get from working in coffee is something unreal.
How are you? Welcome to the Entrepreneur Experiment Podcast with me, Gary Fox. Today, my guest is Colin Harmon. This is a very simple episode. You're going to learn how to build a coffee empire. Colin started in his spare room and now has an empire spanning 15 years and 8 outlets and a global distribution. Here's my chat with Colin. It takes courage and belief in yourself and your business idea to take the step to set up your own business. In the early stages, entrepreneurship can be a lonely road, even through those milestone moments. Deciding to commit to the idea you've been mulling over, learning, growing, and developing your skills, building a team to help you along the way, preparing to launch into new markets. Enterprise Ireland is there for all of those startup moments. From providing advice and guidance to new founders through our startup network, to pre-seed funding and early investment, we're here to help bring your ambition to fruition. To find out how Enterprise Ireland can help you on your startup journey, visit enterprise-ireland.com. Nostra, an Irish IT company, offers world-class managed IT services, cloud solutions, IT support, and more, all tailored to meet your business needs. Whether you're streamlining operations or boosting productivity, their expert team is ready to help. Visit nostra.ie or email info@nostra.ie to see how they can solve your IT challenges today. Before we dive into today's episode, I want to share a game changer for your business, Azure Communications. When it comes to print and marketing solutions, these folks, led by CEO Jenny Johnston, are the real deal. Whether you need an eye-catching brochure, sleek business cards, or a full-blown digital campaign, Azure Communications has you covered. They're not just about high-quality prints or digital campaigns, they're also about delivering great results. And here's the best part. Just for listeners of The Entrepreneur Experiment, you can get 20% off your first order. Just give them a call or go online and use the code FOX20. With personalized service and fast turnaround times, Azure Communications will help you make the impact your business deserves. Trust me, when it comes to making your brand stand out, Azure Communications is the provider of choice. Check them out at azurecom.ie. Use code FOX20. Elevate your marketing game today. Colin, welcome to the pod.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You are very welcome. You have been much requested.
Is that my mother?
I thought it was you just set up all these fake accounts. all these blue tick accounts going, yeah. Oh, you know who'd be an interesting guest?
Okay.
You are synonymous with coffee in Ireland. What is it that you do?
What is it that I do? That's a good question. Well, I suppose the formal answer is that I run 3FE Coffee, and we have a coffee roastery and coffee website and soon to be 8 shops around Dublin. And we do everything from coffee beans to coffee machines, books, paraphernalia, brewers, the lot. In my day to day, it's was less straightforward. Like, we have a team of 70 people.
Wow.
Yeah. Most of those work in the retail side of things. So, like, you know, chefs, baristas, you know, managers. And then we've got a team with a roastery, which is smaller. And I suppose, yeah, just working with that team and problem solving. And I don't know, wherever there's a bottleneck, that's usually where you find me, I think.
It's funny, like, when I always ask founders that question, it's always like the hardest question of the whole pod. You're like, I don't know.
You spend most of the time asking yourself, like, what should I be doing here? You know,
so. It's like when people, I was at a wedding last weekend, and everyone always goes, you know, at the wedding, what do you do? And I'm like, some people, I'm like, I'm trying it. I'll go, I have a media business. And they're like, oh, what does that mean? I'm like, well, I have a podcast and da 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 da. Because I got sick of people saying, I'd say, oh, I have a podcast. They're like, how do you make money from that? And then eventually they go,
So what else is, you know, what is your job?
What else?
Like, no, that's the job. And I just kind of like probably got self-conscious and fed up of answering it. So now I go, I have a media business. We do business content. Yeah. They're like, oh, that sounds sufficiently boring not to ask any more follow-ups.
Yeah. Well, like, yeah, weddings are kind of funny because everybody, I mean, if you're sitting at a table of eight people, one of them is obsessed with coffee. So
I'd say more than one.
At least one, anyway. Yeah, so I don't know. Sometimes I dread the question. They're like, what do you do? Ah, stuff.
Just like, work in a shop.
Yeah. You don't want to be talking shop on your day off. So, but yeah, I mean, this is the worst things you can be doing, you know?
I love having guests like you on because most people on that topic, most people will know your brand because it's, and I said to you outside, I was like, I thought you were going to give me some deep insight as to how you've built such a strong brand. But the 3FE brand is so strong.
Thank you. Yeah. I don't know. It's funny because people say that to me and they're like, oh, how do you do it? I'm like, I have no idea. Honestly, like it feels like a lot of micro decisions as you go along. And it's not like we sit down and go, okay, this is what we're going to do for the brand this year. Yeah. It's not really how we work. But it's also like, it's a big burden. You know, you're like, don't mess this up, you know, you're like, it's another year now. So how do we continue this growing? So yeah, like thankful that it is, you know, but it's a long process, you know.
I'll go back and ask you how you started in a minute, but kind of give us like an update of where you are now. You said eight shops. Soon to
yeah,
be eight.
So, I mean, hopefully tomorrow morning we'll be opening our eighth location. It's eighth retail location. They're all based in Dublin City. Some of them, they're kind of roughly divided into two kinds. There's one that's just kind of coffee and treats, and then there's the other side that has like a full food menu. So a lot of eggs and coffee is a huge part of our business. And then I think it surprises a lot of people, but like the bigger side of our business is the roastery side. So we roast coffee and we ship coffee all over the world. So a lot of that is to homes. So we've got like coffee subscriptions. So a lot of people have like a bag of coffee comes through the door every week. Or else they'll just, you know, buy whatever new coffees they have on. And then we sell filters and tampers and books and all sorts of stuff. And then there's the wholesale aspect of that. So like supplying shops and restaurants and offices like all over the world. Most of it's in Ireland, but increasingly so, it's all over the world.
And how do you get all over the world? Like, how do you build? Because this is the secret question for every Irish founder, right? Because any Irish founder with ambition, oh, you know, I'm going to start in Ireland, then I'm going to go abroad. How do you make that jump? Especially as something that's like tangible. It's different in tech and stuff like that, where you can just turn it on. Whereas with this, you literally have to get this bag from Glasnevin to wherever, Germany, Berlin, whatever it is.
It's a weird thing. Like, I mean, it's very organic. Like, it's not like we sit down every year and go, this year we're attacking Austria, or, you know, that's not really how it works. And it comes down to like, there's a bit of a mantra that like, we, you know, try to do all the things that you don't put on Instagram, do those well, you know? And it's like, just pack a box, make sure that you got the order right, make sure the packing slip is in there, make sure it's taped up properly, that the invoice is correct, that, you know, the payment gets taken from the account, or like all these small things, and just keep the focus on that. And I think when you're doing that, and obviously that the coffee that you source is good coffee, it's roasted well, good product, people get value, that's quite a scalable thing. And
but how do people know about it though? I think that's the thing. Obviously, like, have a great product. I used to live down beside one of your shops. And how do I know about it? Probably just because it's going so long, if I'm honest. Yeah. Because I've heard about it years ago. Like, I like coffee. I would go out of my way to have a nice coffee. I would literally divert off. Like, when my wife was in Hall Street having her daughter, I would go to Grand Canal Street.
Oh, we see a bit of that.
And I would, like, divert in to, like, I'd park over here, but I'd divert round to go to there to get a really good coffee. For myself, she couldn't have any, obviously. So I'd go there, and I think actually, the morning, actually, that's interesting. The morning after my daughter was born, I went to your place, had breakfast.
I talk to kids in the shop, and I'm like, because I know their parents, and I'm like, I know, I remember the day you were born. Yeah. I remember your parents coming in here, holding the baby carrier, and just being like, seeing that kind of passage of time is something else. But yeah, the whole street crew, like that's it's a really nice part of it. And also the other thing is that we've got the registry office across the road. So all the weddings all the time,
That's
you know,
cool.
So it's like, it's the journey life. We just need a graveyard in the back somewhere. We'll be laughing then, you know.
But isn't that beautiful though, to be part of people's lives in a meaningful way?
Oh, like it's the cheesiest thing ever. But like, that's why I work in coffee, is that like, it's, you have I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm interested in coffee and different varietals and origins and, you know, equipment and machinery and all that. But like the social payback you get from working in coffee is something unreal. Like if I have a problem with my record player or my shower or, you know, I want to buy a guinea pig, I'm one customer away from solving those problems. You know what I mean?
It's like me with the pod, actually. Yeah, I've now this network of people. I just flick on questions. I was saying to you earlier, but before we started, like I'm not a tech head, but I now have so many tech friends and people. They just go, here, what's a good X? And they just write back going, oh, this is the one.
Yeah.
You're like, unreal.
Yeah, yeah. It's great. It's
human Google
network, you know? Or even like, and I mean, I don't get to work on, they don't let me work on bar anymore, but they like, people come in the door and they open the door and they're excited, like, I'm about to get coffee. They're kind of happy. And then they get coffee and then they're happier and then they leave even happier than they came. And you're like, great. And so you literally make people happy for a living.
Coffee's replaced the pub.
Yeah. Like it's that, I think this, like people talk, especially in the recent years, like about the growth of coffee in Ireland and say, oh, is it a bubble? It's like, I don't think it was a bubble. And especially during COVID, I think it was an acceleration. We probably saw like 10 years growth in the space of 3 years, you know? But like, I think traditionally, like Ireland had those, like the social spaces were like the post office, the bank, the market,
yeah,
the church. Like it's, all of those places were like, and the pub were the places where like people went to socialize. And all of those places, for various reasons, are not doing as well as they used to be, you know. But that kind of social currency that Irish people have that want to spend all the time, and I'm not talking about money, I'm just like they want to get out and talk to people, that's still there.
We're wired for connection. Yeah. We're social beasts. I think we learned that during COVID. Because the first while, you're kind of going, oh, yeah, this is all right.
Yeah.
Then I had this like deep kind of like nagging, pain is too dramatic, but like anxiety of like, why do I feel so off? And it was the lack of connection.
Yeah, yeah.
It was that missing piece. Like I live out in Wicklow and I go to the Wicklow Wolf. That's part of my routine.
Yeah.
I go in there, I chat to Kat or whoever's on and we have a little chat. And
you don't even have to talk to people. You could just be in a room where other people are talking and it kind of, you get something from that. And I think like there was a time we used to get people come to us and say, you know, would a specialty coffee shop work in this town or that town? And my answer was always like, yes. Like if you make good coffee, people will drink it. Mm. Like it's not an elitist thing by any stretch. But there was always a reluctance. But then as soon as COVID happened, like people were moving back home and like small shops opening in small towns in Ireland. And the day they opened has been absolutely gangbusters. And a lot of them, I mean, there was a lot of horse boxes that aren't there anymore, but a lot of them have moved into bricks and mortar.
You know? I thought that was class. I was so excited because you go wherever in the country and like usually the coffee selection would be pretty crap.
Yeah.
And you'd be like, oh, it's the cafe when you're like, I'd rather not. Or, you know, a big chain, which you're also kind of going, nah, I'm all right. But then the coffee, all the horse boxes popped up. I'm like, class, because yeah, they'd be serving 3FE or they'd be serving another one. Then I'm like, oh, class, at least you know they're serving good coffee. I thought that was class. Like, and thankfully, a lot of them have made the jump into physical, but I think it definitely has.
Yeah. Like when we started, if you said to me, I had a good cup of coffee, I could ask you two questions and then I'd tell you who made it. Mm. Like I would know that person personally. And now like shops open, like we'd stop off, or like I love a road trip with the family, you know, we'd stop off somewhere, take a risk and say, this is really good. No idea who they are, no idea where the coffee came from. Like it's great, you know.
It's brilliant. Like it's interesting you said that about COVID. Do you think that that accelerated coffee industry?
Yeah. How initially, come? No, but
like, yeah. How come? Break that down for me.
So it's funny, like I was saying to you before, the way we buy coffee is, I mean, there's different terms and all that kind of stuff, is generally supposed to call it direct trade. And that means that we go, and now I say we, my business partner, he's charged with traveling to all these places around the world, meets farmers, sees what they do. Like the idea is pay them more than they get ordinarily. And we have direct access. We buy all of their production. They get a better price. We get better quality and you build relationships. So today we've got coffee on our bar. So we've been buying for 15 years, you know. But when you buy coffee that way, the downside is you don't get to order a bag at a time. Like, so literally containers arrive up at the roastery and gloves are on and we're all bailing these bags out. So when COVID happened, all of the shops in the whole country just closed. And I was sitting in the shop and nobody else was because you weren't allowed. And there's like, you know, 20 ton of coffee on the way to me. And our wholesale operation has just dropped off a cliff overnight.
Of course, yeah, because you're selling both sides. You're selling direct to consumer and you're selling to all the coffee shops. Supply
just not, and then like everywhere was closing down. And so that was quite worrying. And you can't just call them up and say, actually, you know, can you take it back? That's not how it works. And I'm just sitting there in my head, my hands going like, this is it, we're done, you know? And then over the next week or so, now we were quite lucky because we'd, we'd overinvested in our web shop. So we had a really, really capable web shop based on the idea that we would get to a stage where web sales would be quite substantial, you know? And because you look at the UK, people look at the UK market and go, well, there's market is 13 times Ireland's market. So therefore, this is what our market is worth. It doesn't like, up until recently anyway, the UK market was by far the most advanced online buying market in the world. So the Irish market isn't 1/13th the size of that. It was like, you know, 1/50th or, you know, 1/100th the size of it. So it just wasn't as advanced and the shipping wasn't as good and all that kind of stuff. So we've always overinvested in that on the hope that one day it would work. So when COVID happened, whenever we were scrambling to set up a web shop and try to figure out how to do it, you know, it was gangbusters, but it was like they were losing money probably selling stuff, but we had everything in place. And I suppose we'd already had a substantial business online, but when that happened, it just went bang.
And so, when you say online, do you mean like
online
people like me buying?
Yeah. Like everybody bought like home espresso machines and grinders. And like there was a time we couldn't get hold of them. There was a Chemex paper drought of 2022, you know, and all this kind of stuff. Everybody's just brewing at home and it just went all online. And we were fortunate as well because it's an essential service. It was like our shops were, depending on the time, were reduced down to just coffee.
Mm.
So we could do, you know, one in, one out kind of service to staff. And it was, God, I'm getting flashbacks now, but it was, I was working on the bar then and you'd get people coming in and they come to the door and you'd, quite rewarding, but quite drowning as well, because people come to the counter and instantly you'd be like, I'm the only person they're talking to today.
Mm, yeah.
And it was just this, you know.
Right.
And it was just, it was quite intense, you know, but people really appreciated it. And they had something to do. And yeah, it was a crazy time, but we could thankfully keep selling coffee. And that, then people started opening coffee shops in, you know, horse boxes, small towns, everybody moved home. And I think it was happening anyway. I think people that go to Australia, there's a few of them knocking around, they kind of bring that culture home with them, you know? And it was happening anyway, but whatever happened in COVID, I suppose people are stuck at home. Everybody got into coffee and bang, you know?
And did you come out of COVID stronger?
It depends on what perspective.
Not mentally or emotionally, the other way.
I think there was years where our roasting grew by 40%, you know?
Wow.
Which is in itself is not, it's not a good thing, you know?
Why?
It's hard. If I told you to do 40% more podcasts next week, you know, it's just like that takes
you get
itself.
Me the guests, I'll knock them down.
growth is great, but it's growing anything is difficult, you know? And I think it's easy just to look at the numbers, this is brilliant, but it takes its toll on, you know, you yourself, your staff, you know, your customers, and you got to figure stuff out that you haven't done before. And
it's interesting to hear you at that scale say that, because I think people would look at you and go, yeah, but sure, Colin's at this age, just he knows the crack.
Colin has no idea what he's doing. it's very often I'd be chatting to staff and I'm like, okay, just stop here. Do you know this is the first time I've done this? So now I'm like, I have never grown a coffee company before. I am absolutely making this up. So just bear that in mind as you're going along, you know. I have no track record of doing this before. So it's, growth is great, but it's hard, you know, and trying to figure out how to do things. And you started talking about the brand, but building a brand is you get people's trust and just not breaking that trust.
Mm.
That's what it's about. So if you walked into a shop tomorrow and you saw a bottle of beer with a 3FE logo on it, you go, I'll take a punt on that. And it's not because you don't know if I know how to brew beer or if I know anything about beer, but you're like, they wouldn't have done that unless they knew what they were doing. And this has to be good because it has that logo.
Not everyone thinks like that though. So explain that thought process to me, because I was only having this chat with my wife a few weeks ago about a brand, kind of a well-known brand, and they're just on everything. And I'm kind of going, oh. They're just on everything now. I don't really trust any of what they're doing. They're an Irish brand, but it just seems like they've leveraged themselves into everything. You're kind of going, you can't be doing this.
Yeah.
The quality can't be there.
All things to all people.
You know, especially when you're a smallish company. So how do you keep that thought process? Because not everyone thinks like that.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's in the day to day stuff. I'm not really the sort of person to sit down and go, right, this year we're targeting 33.7% growth in this area. That's not how we do things. It's just, you know, it's very much organic how we grow it. And I think very often when we're trying to solve a problem and we can't figure it out, the question becomes, what's the right thing to do? And like, what should we do? And that sometimes feels like an easier question. As we go, okay, we'll just do it that way, you know?
What do you mean by the right thing to do?
Well, I mean, you're burdened with a lot of things. Like it's, okay, so we had a customer, they weren't a customer, somebody contacted us about an espresso machine that they bought, and they'd bought it off somebody who had bought off somebody who bought it off us. And this person was running a shop and the machine wasn't working very well. And they called us and like, you need to fix this. Like, well, I really don't. Actually in a different country as well, technically. It was up in Northern Ireland. And I was like, well, I actually don't need to do it. But it was like, chatted to them. I got a sense that they were kind of, you know, they were kind of angry because they were under a lot of pressure. And I was like, we could fix this for them, you know. And we're not obliged to. It's not our problem. It's out of warranty. But it's like, okay, look, let's just figure this out. So we helped them, we figured it out and fixed the machine. And on paper, that's not what you're supposed to do, but like, it's the right thing to do, you know?
Okay. Yeah, I get it now. Yeah.
That becomes, and I think that's when it comes down to like to branding, and don't get me wrong, like we've made mistakes and there's definitely people out there who hate my guts, but it's like, it's.
If you don't have haters, you're not doing, that's why I don't worry about online hate. I'm like, well, that means you're reaching people that are beyond your audience.
Yeah.
That
means you're pushing. You know, you're trying to do a good job. So like, it's not like, we're not like putting stuff out and going, ah, listen, we can pay this much for that and we'll overcharge them by this much and make a fortune. It's like, well, what's a decent price for this? You know, is that good enough? You know, are we doing that well enough? Can we improve that? You know, it's the simple thing. And then the brand takes care of itself, you know. Like I was talking to somebody once and they were like, yeah, but it's easy for you because you've got such a strong brand. It's like, take a step back there in the thought process. So, you know, it's like, it's about trust. It's gaining people's trust. And then when you have their trust, it's like, it's so easy to lose it.
Oh, for sure. Especially nowadays. Yeah. Especially nowadays. Everyone is just queuing up to cancel you.
Yeah, and hard
people
to
are just
back.
Waiting for something, especially like you, who's quite notable and quite well known. People are just waiting. Some people are just waiting for you to slip up.
Ah, yeah. And like, and the other thing, you suffer from the other side because like, it's funny actually, because we turned 15 just before Christmas there. And I suppose we're quite, in terms of the specialty coffee roasteries in Ireland, we're like one of the bigger ones, you know? So there would be a lot of shops that wouldn't buy from us, you know, and it's kind of like we've moved into that, the big bad guy kind of say, but it's just kind of, you know, you have to accept that that's the way the cookie crumbles, you know. But it was like, you know, a lot of, it's kind of like, oh no, their early stuff is a lot better, you know.
Loved his early album. Don't like the new album.
And I remember like, I had this flashback to remember, there was a coffee forum on boards.ie and somebody went on and absolutely slated us and was like this whole kind of like, oh, they're not as good as it used to be. And I remember a few years ago, I went back and I looked it up again and I was like, wait a minute, that was written 6 months after we opened. I was like, and at that stage, they preferred the early stuff. So I was like, oh, well, you know, here we are. So it's a...
Well, it's like the thing, if you try to please everybody, you please nobody.
Exactly.
It's just know what you're doing. You said something there, you know, you don't plan growth. You don't plan, oh, grow by 33%. So how do you benchmark your success then? Like, how do you know if you're doing well?
We measure it, like, yeah. But I mean, it's... let's say in one of those COVID years, because we're going to get 20% growth this year, and then you do 40, you know, or like it's, what's they say, like everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face, you know, or you might not have gross sales in that year, but like maybe all of your competitors are declining, you know, and I think it's, I think it comes down to like the day-to-day activities of what you're doing and improving those things and getting better. And like there's a guy Garrett who works for me and him love these conversations about like improving steps, or even better again, removing steps. Like if there's 5 steps, like what if it was 2 steps, you know, that kind of stuff. And I found over the years that's, I find like real joy in that, you know, just finding something that's like an expensive, complicated problem and then looking at it from a different perspective and coming up with something that just makes it go away, or you solve it and in a much easier, much simpler, much cheaper way. And like that's brilliant, you know.
Simplicity is beautiful.
Yeah. And I love to just figuring stuff out. Like there's a lot of what we do that we do ourselves, and we could definitely go out and, you know, hire marketing companies or design companies or like consultants to do stuff and do better for it. But that's what I like doing. You know what I mean? Like I like figuring stuff out, like getting into the weeds and stuff. And that's the joy for me, is like actually just like, do you know when you have a sewer pipe
Okay. I'm aware what they are, yeah.
So, like, if a sewer pipe is too flat, it's everything sits in the sewer pipe, right? And then it doesn't go anywhere and it blocks up.
I've had this issue upstairs in my house, so I'll avoid PTSD, but keep going, yeah.
But you think, oh, the thing to do is to, like, increase the incline. But if you increase the incline too much, the water runs past the solids, for want of a better word.
Yeah.
And the solids get left behind, and then it gets clogged, you know? And it's like... Like, the process of finding that out was a difficult one, and with, you know, there's consequences all around with that kind of stuff. But, like, that's fascinating. And I love getting, like, you could be solving problems with shit pipes one day, and then the next day you're looking at, like, how to solve problems with signage, or, like, storing green coffee, or, like, I don't know. What we do is so varied. Like, it's websites and books and tables and everything in between. And that's what I really love, is just getting stuck into all that kind of stuff. Like, it's sometimes coffee's like the byproduct of it all, you know, it's just something that happens on the edges.
I'm interested in that, though, because that problem solver mentality, because you have generally the life cycle of a company is start off exactly like you said there, you know, grinding and problem solving and in, you know, designing the packaging. And then they get a little bit bigger, and then they hire all the consultants, and they hire the marketing agency, and they hire this and they hire that. Spend about 12 months and 200 grand and then go, it was better than we did ourselves.
Yeah.
And then bring it all back in house again. It's that life cycle is so common. I've heard that story but like more times than I can count.
I would definitely also say there's been times when I should have hired a professional. I've made an absolute mess of some stuff. So there's that too. But like but when you pull it off, it's really interesting.
And I think it's the difference between getting help and completely outsourcing. Completely outsourcing is a very different beast. Getting help is the fastest way to success.
Yeah.
Bringing in the expertise. Big fan of that. I always watch, when I watch Room to Improve with Dermot Bannon, I'm always going, screaming at Sally, going, just listen to him.
Yeah.
He's the bloody architect. You don't hire a plumber and tell them how to plumb the house. Just let them go. When you hire someone greater, when you get someone's expertise, just let them paint, as they say.
I think as well, like, sometimes I've found in the past that, like, I'd be hiring somebody, but actually what I'm actually doing is I'm outsourcing accountability, you know what I mean?
Mm.
And I'm like,
yeah.
And then I'm like, you know, just, you know, you could probably figure this out yourself if you try, you know? But like, yeah, that's, I suppose, I think, like, when you're running a business or you're being an entrepreneur or whatever, it's...
How are you air quotes the thing there? You're on, like, the pod now, Colin. You gotta go with the flow.
I know, I'm like 15 years deep and I still struggle calling myself that, but it's like... It seems a lot, like, sexier from the outside, and you're like, a lot of what I do is really boring. Like, it's just coming to work and explaining the same problem and solution back to somebody, or tackling the same thing that went wrong 3 months ago, and a lot of just drudgery and just normal stuff all the time. You know, it's not all podcasts and you know, baby kissing and cutting ribbons and stuff. You know, so it's I don't know. It's wide and varied.
It's an interesting time to chat to you because, and we talked about this briefly outside, it's a weird time in hospitality. It's a weird time in the world, but it seems from the outside, like someone who has no experience of the whole thing, it seems like a weird time to be in hospitality, hearing so many negative news cycles about, like, so-and-so's closing, so-and-so's closing, so-and-so's closing. How have you thrived in this environment? Because you're going up to 8 now tomorrow. But, like, bring me on the process from 1 to 2. I think that's a really interesting one. Starting one is really interesting, but you figured that out. How did you figure out going from 1 to 2 and then 2 to 3?
That was kind of the hard thing, because, like, when you open one shop, and I'm sure this applies to lots of different businesses, like, it runs off your own personal energy and enthusiasm. And that's how it works and that's how it thrives. And then when you have 2 shops or 3 shops, you can't do that across 3 locations. You know what I mean? Like, it can't run off. It has to have systems and processes, and other people have to have accountability and goals and responsibilities, you know? And that's because you kind of have to figure it all out all over again. Like, having one shop you can do by your own personal strength. And, like, you can make loads of mistakes, and if you work hard enough and show up all the time, it'll still work out. But when you have 3 places, it doesn't work that way. And I think, like... obviously we're in the middle of a bit of a tech zone where we are in Grand Canal Street, and I often envy the tech guys, because they can scale stuff just like that, you know, just goes. And, like, when you're doing bricks and mortar retail, there's people involved, you know, and there's like pipes and wires and all sorts of stuff. And there's a steady stream of problems all the time. So trying to do all those things and scale them is quite difficult, because scaling is definitely exciting. You see the numbers going up, but like, I'll tell you now, like the fastest thing to scale is problems. Like when you start scaling, problems scale so much faster than solutions do. And something that's a small problem in one location is going to be a colossal problem across 3 or 4 locations.
So how did you equip yourself then with the skills? Because you can't, you're exactly right. You can't outwork a problem when, you know, there's just not enough hours in the day when you have 2 or 3 out locations.
It's trial and error, you know, it's trial and error. And like it comes in waves, and sometimes you think you're nailing it, and then sometimes you think this is all falling apart. And like it was time last year, we lost like 4 senior staff in the space of a few months. It's like, oh, the wheels are coming off here. And then like a couple of months pass and you're like, oh no, we're flying now again. And it's like, it's all that kind of stuff. And I suppose it's just, yeah, like looking at problems and trying to scale at the rate of your competency, you know, like is and preempting problems. It's a constant thing, you know, especially in retail, because it's so difficult. And like you were saying with hospitality, like if you asked me to invest in any business, it would not be hospitality. Like there's far easier ways to make money than hospitality. And the nature of the beast is like places open and close. It's always been like that. And like when you open the newspapers on the weekend looking for restaurant reviews, they're not reviewing some place that opened 6 years ago. They're reviewing, you know, they're all reviewing the same place that opened last week. Especially restaurants have it harder again. Like the need to be constantly like something new and interesting, and you have a whole crowd of people that just drift between them, you know, onto the next place, you know. So it's that's really difficult, and trying to stay relevant and not chase cool, I think, is a really important part of that. Because it's like in hospitality, if you start trying to be the cool one all the time, like that's by its definition, it will pass.
Not cool.
Yeah. Like cool is a transient thing.
Yeah.
So you can't be constantly cool, you know? So it's like you need to focus on doing all the other stuff well, you know?
So is that how you've essentially stayed timeless?
Thank you for saying we're timeless. I think it took a long time to make me realize that actually, I'll tell you now, your old pal, Eamon Leonard now.
We're sitting in his house right now.
We're sitting in his house now. He always pops into my mind because Eamon was obviously a very successful tech entrepreneur. And so he'd be sitting in Grand Canal Street, and this might surprise you now, but Eamon wouldn't be shy of telling you what he thinks.
I'm shocked and appalled.
But in a good way, you know, he can see things and he's constructed in his
And feet, he sees like, things yeah, differently.
He does, yeah.
Sometimes he says something and you're like, oh, yeah. Actually, you'd never even looked at it from that lens before.
Yeah.
He'll ask you a question. You're like, oh, yeah, I actually don't know.
Yeah. And he's like, he's good at like, he'd give you negative feedback in a way that was serious, but also useful, you know? Mm. And there was a time, I suppose, like, so I used to do a lot of barista competitions, and like, it was very much like all my energy went into being like cutting edge of coffee, like, and traveling all over the world and doing all sorts of mad projects and stuff, just like this very niche kind of like pinnacle of coffee, and it's like very focused on a very niche market that would, it was kind of big deal in the small pond sort of stuff, you know, and trying to make that cup, you know, the best cup of coffee you possibly could, you know. And Eamon said to me one day, he's like, do you know why I come to 3FE? And I was like, because the coffee's great. And he's like, no. I was like, okay, here we go. Why do you come to 3FE? He goes, because it's never shit. And I was like, initially really insulted. I was like, what? And he goes, it's never shit. And I was like, okay. And he goes, because I go to some place and it's great. And then I go back the next day and it's not. And it really annoys me. But I come here, just never shit. Well done. And I was like, huh. And then after a while, once I digested it, I was like, it became this kind of like internal kind of like,
was that a compliment or an insult? You know? Let me process that.
Yeah. So it's like, I know, but I think it's having that, if I give you an amazing cup of coffee, then say, okay, we need to make that 10% better tomorrow. How do you do that? It's impossible. But like ultimately people judge you on the worst thing you do. Like, so taking the worst cup of coffee you serve and making that better is, first of all, it's achievable. But also it means that low bar is there, because like, if you can give people a good experience and a good coffee every time they come, like you have their trust, and then they'll keep coming back. And I suppose suddenly the pressure was off in terms of like trying to make this incredible cup of coffee every single day. It's like, no, look, we're making lots of coffees. Let's just make the low end really good, you know?
Raise the bar.
And just changing
the board.
That focus made it a little bit easier to look at then opening more shops and doing more things. It's like, okay, that seems more, yeah, it's that thing about being, like it's an everyday business. And that's a really interesting part of it for me, is like just getting, you know, gaining people's trust and that you become an everyday part of their life. You know?
That's an interesting point about consistency, because I think that is what we crave most, right? You don't want to be surprised in a bad way.
Yeah, you don't want occasionally brilliant.
Yeah.
You know, just all the time we're just like...
consistently good, not occasionally great.
Yeah. And I think like it's hard to find comparisons for what we do, I suppose, but it's like I don't like... like you go to the pub with your mates and you'll have all these like interesting, craft beers from different craft beers. But like two or three of them are gone and everybody's drinking Guinness. And I'm like, what if we were Guinness? You know, it's really good all the time. You know?
Yeah, I think of that a lot at the minute because there's so many new products now across the board between tech, food, everything. It must be so hard for new products now to stick because you have endless choice now.
Yeah.
Like we literally, at the end of our fingertips, we have this little magical device that can deliver anything to us. And often now within the space of an hour, and it's getting faster and faster. Like, so it must be so hard for products to stick.
Well, like even with coffee roasting, like when we started roasting, and this is not an official list, this is just my own list. I had like a list of about, I think like 14 roasteries in Ireland. This was 2011. And currently I have list on my laptop. That is not an exhaustive list by any stretch. I've definitely missed people. I discover new ones every day. But I've over 250 roasteries on the list.
What?
In Ireland. Yeah.
Whoa. I thought you were going to say it was like if it's gone down. But that's... No.
Yeah. And the bad news is that they're really good. Like, they're doing a really good job and they're lovely people. You're like, ugh!
I want to hate you, but I can't.
Yeah,
well, that
yeah,
was like the thing someone, where there was it's like the distillery boom. Like there was a distillery in every county at one stage. Now that has died off massively. But yeah, that's wild. 250. Well,
my wife's from Kells. And when I met her first, I remember chatting to one of her mates and he was saying like between the hotel and the GA club and you know, the pubs and the, you know, all this kind of stuff. He said of something like 40 bars in Kells. No, there's not. Yeah. Town this side, no. But once you tot them all up, you're like, oh my God, there is, you know?
Yeah, I'm from Nina. It's the same thing. I think Nina had the highest ratio of pubs to people at one stage.
Yeah. And it's all the ones you don't count, like the ones in the GA club or whatever, in the rugby club and all the add-on ones, the hotel bar, all that kind of stuff. And they start stacking up. And a lot of towns in Ireland were like that. And I don't think a lot of the towns are still like that. I think they've definitely decreased. But like I was saying before, that social kind of interaction still needs to happen somewhere, so it's a lovely space for it, and I think that's where that growth is, and I see more growth. I think specialty coffee, especially it's not really a term we lean on too much at 3FE, but it's like it'll grow more, you know.
When you say specialty coffee, what do you mean as opposed to like normal?
So coffee's graded, and if you're, you know, below a certain amount of points, it's not specialty coffee, and it has to be, you know, graded by Q graders to get that that standard. But it's not a protected term.
Is it a quality thing? When you say graded, like, what do you mean?
So
I've got this bag in my hand now.
Coffee is grown as in cherries, and inside the cherries there are two seeds. They're not beans at all; they're seeds. You got to take the cherry off the seed, and you got to try it, and there's various ways of doing that, and each one of those ways has different impacts of flavor. And then you got to get it to a roaster as soon as possible, because it's not like wine. As soon as it comes off the tree, it's going downhill. So you got to get it to a roaster quicker. And then when you roast, it comes like, it looks like hulled peas. Like it's hard. And when you roast it expands and turns brown. And then you got to brew it quickly. So the fresher it is, in general terms, the better, you know. But the term specialty coffee, like you go to like a petrol station or, you know, chip fan around the back of a football stadium and they'll say specialty coffee. So it's not really protected. So that reason, we don't really use that term.
Yeah.
And sometimes like we've had coffee in the past, like, so everything we sell is specialty, but we've had coffees over the years that have probably dropped below it. But Steve would say, we're putting this on because it's mad. And it's like, it doesn't tick the boxes to get the points to be classified as, like, it famously had a coffee label and the descriptor was like strawberries dipped in cow dung in a good way.
I love that. Yeah, that's so and there's novelty value there too, isn't there? It's like the cat's coffee thing. You're like, okay.
So, like, aside from the every now and again we'll do something for, let's say, experiential stuff, you know. Like, he once actually sold defective coffee so people could know what defective coffee tasted like. It was like a bag of defect.
Right.
If it was phenol, I think it was what it was. But anyway, but yeah, so that's the term given to it. But, like, I think what we try to do in all things, like in our processes and in the ways that we try to simplify. So for me, it's just coffee. Just really nice coffee. Mm. If we've gone to, we will do all the box ticking and sourcing and grading and all that kind of stuff and make sure it's good standard and measure your moisture levels and watch the roast curves. And so all you got to worry about is just turn it up and we'll have done all the stuff. Now, if you want to learn about that stuff, you know, we can bore you to tears. But, like, trying to simplify those things for people, I think, is where we do well is, like, actually just making things simple for people.
When did you write a book? I have it here.
Yeah.
I have a little copy of it here. So, what I know, first of all, the title, What I Know About Running Coffee Shops by Colin Harman. It's, does what it says in the tin, Ron Seal School of Marketing, I see.
It was a working title that stuck. So what year was this? Like 2015, I think, 2016. I decided to go back to university. I did a master's in innovation, enterprise and design. It was a small group of people and most of them wanted to set up businesses. So I remember going around the class and they're saying, like, oh, I want to do this, want to do this, want to do this. And they had ideas of open up businesses. And he got to me and I was like, I'm here because I need to figure out what just happened. I have no idea what I'm doing.
Where did you do it?
Smurfit, UCD Smurfit. So as part of that course, you had to launch a business. And of course, they wouldn't let me use the one I'd already launched. So I decided that I would do this. So I get contacted to all the competitions that I've done. I've done different consultancy projects for different espresso machine manufacturers and grinder manufacturers. A network of people around the world. So they'd always email me, and even people in Dublin, just like, oh, like this, I'm looking for advice. So I had this kind of, a lot of the topics that would come up, I would already know the answer to. And I found it quite easy just to blurt them out. A lot of them was just actually just pulling up old emails or articles that I'd done for blogs or magazines or something, and pulling it all together or thinking of topics and then writing an answer for it. And the idea was to actually launch software that would, because I needed to do something that was scalable. That was the buzzword, you know. So books aren't technically scalable. So there was supposed to be a precursor to software that small shops could use. One look into software and I was like, reverse quickly. But the book stuck. So anyway, I launched the book and it came from, like, I was very fortunate. It was perfect storm stuff for me because, like, we can ship stuff all over the world. It's not my job. So I basically got to write it and design it. So I got Connor and David, who designed it, I said, just do something that's beautiful and feels nice. Like, we made so
many, what a brief.
We made so many compromises on the cost of it and the layout of it just because I wanted it to be that way. Like, it's that size because I wanted it to be like a coffee table book, but also something you could put in your bag.
All right.
I wanted it to feel really nice. So the texture of it was really important. The margins on the side are a certain width so you could write notes on the side.
Yeah. The guy who designed
the font comes to our shop for coffee every day and I forgot
his
name.
Up camera so they can kind of see it's laid out like that. So, like, it's my kind of book. I love writing on books.
Yeah.
If I read a non-fiction book like this, I write all over it. I write everywhere.
That's what
I write,
it's designed for.
I write,
you know,
notes and I write, like, at the end of the chapter, I'm such a nerd, I'll write down the key takeaway from the chapter and stuff. Like, so I love it. But, like, it's laid out, like, really clean.
Thank you.
It's kind of like it's kind of like your shops. Like, it's very clean. It's very kind of...
Like, the idea was basically to write it in a way... Like, I think that, like, most people at some point in their life, where it seems like this to me, I would go, oh, God, I'd love to own a coffee shop. And I meet people all the time. They're like, oh, like, I'd love to own a coffee shop. Like, I love going to a coffee shop and trying all the different coffees and chatting to the baristas. And I'm like, man, just keep doing that.
Well, you've done the two things everyone wants to do. Everyone wants to write a book and everyone wants to open a coffee shop. Done both. Completed ironically life. making business out of the second one.
So I meet people that say they read it and they loved it and they're never going to open a coffee shop. I'm like, it's money well spent then, you know, because there's a more expensive way to find that out.
But so how did you launch it then?
Once we had the design down, we found printers, printed it myself, launched it online, published, so basically self-published. And honestly, like, it was, I wanted to be able to pull it off a shelf in 10 years time and go, I like this, I'm proud of this, like, show my kids. And it kind of got a life of its own. So, like, it's been translated into, I think, 7 different languages now. So between...
Why did you self-publish?
I'd been approached by a publisher before, and what they wanted me to write was not something that I wanted to write. A lot of, like, the reason I do what I do is because I don't really like being told what to do. I don't mean in an aggressive way. I just prefer doing my own thing. I've just always been a bit like that.
I hear you.
I had a teacher when I was younger said, Harmon, you're great at thinking outside the box, but would you ever like think inside the box for a change there? And I was just like, ugh. So I just like doing my own thing. And I just wanted to do it my own way. And because it's not my job, I don't have to rely on the sales of it. And I think that's what the success of it boiled down to, because like the day we launched it, I think we sold 3,000 books, which is like, it's enough to get you on the bestseller list.
But yeah, I think you top it in Ireland. I think you top it comfortably.
Yeah, like we're on our, I think that English hard copy, we're running into like, I think almost 30,000. And then when you include like ebooks and translations, like it's well over 100,000 worldwide.
That's a phenomenal amount. Like there's well-known authors. I've done a lot of digging into this recently. There's well-known authors who are getting nowhere near that. And they've had a huge advance from like whoever, Penguin. And selling books is bloody hard.
Yeah, well, like I say, but I was very lucky because we have an international network. And because of coffee competitions that I've done, and I know a guy that owns a company like 3FE in Singapore and in France and in Spain. Like they'd call me up and say, do you want to buy a book? And they go, oh, I'll buy a box or I'll buy, like yesterday we sold a pallet to some guy in the US. No idea who it is. Somebody's like, all right, off you go.
A pallet?
Yeah, it's great. And it fitted the space though, because there's lots of books about coffee and lots of books about business, but very little kind of sap in between. And I like to think I did this on purpose. Well, I can't really remember at this stage, but like it's kind of written from a perspective that like anybody that, you don't need to know about coffee to read it. And like a lot of it was sent to my wife, not care, you know, she's not really into coffee or business in the way I am, like, so, but she was my proofreader. And I have an editor, Ian Lamont, obviously, who obviously does a great job too, thanks Ian, but
saved it there at the end.
But she was like this, like, you know, cynical human being beside me going, that's crap.
But isn't that what you need though, because again, you're so deep in the weeds of it,
yeah,
that to you what is blindingly obvious to the person on the street, they're like, what is he talking about? What does that mean? Like me asking about specialty coffee. Like, what is that? Like, it's those questions where you're like, you never want to feel stupid. It's like when I do this pod, I'll always ask really obvious questions because I want to know. Mm. There's no stupid questions, because if you don't know, you don't know.
And I think people are interested in process and like how problems are approached and solved and little tidbits of information. So like, you'd like read books about, I'm a terrible reader. I should try to read a bit more, but it's like books about chefs or architects, or I'm really interested in the process. Like I was saying before, like I've read so many books about cyclists. I'm not really into cycling that much, you know. I don't know why, but I think I've read like 20 books from cyclists. So,
and what is it? Is the pursuit of a passion, pursuit of perfection? What is it?
I don't know. I don't even think it's as
it's not that deep.
It's not that deep. I don't know. Like it's just, I'm just interested in. Like, okay, here's a. So the other week I was, actually when you messaged me, I was not feeling great, I had a flu or something. So my sleep patterns were all over the place. So I woke up in the middle of the night and I picked up my phone. I said, okay, don't start doom scrolling on Instagram. So I went to the BBC. You know, they do these long form articles. So I was looking for one of them, and there was one. It was about saltwater crocodiles. And I was like, oh, okay. So I clicked into that, read a bit saltwater crocodiles, then read a bit more. And then like the next day, like dinner, my wife's like, are you still watching videos about saltwater crocodiles? I'm like, yeah. And she goes, go into your history there. I'd watched like 18 of them and I'd read a few articles about them. And then that led into wolves and kind of bringing, bringing wolves back into Ireland. All that went down these rabbit holes and stuff, and which led into tigers. And now I'm reading a book called The Tiger, which is like one of the best books I've ever written or ever read.
Ryan Holiday has recommended that 100 times.
Really?
I haven't read it yet.
Because I said it to a friend of mine. He goes, is it good? I was like, it's brilliant, but I need somebody else to read it because I have no idea if it's good or not.
Yeah, it's recommended. It's weird you say that. I have that on my Amazon wish list. I have a Ryan Holiday wish list. He does this email every month where it's like, here's the 5 books I've read that were unreal. And he's a brilliant writer. I love his stuff. And that's on it.
Yeah.
They're all obscure-ish.
That's good to hear, 'cause I can't remember.
You're not going mad. You know, it's,
I can't remember
it's
where,
good.
Where it was recommended. It was in some video or podcast and it was like, it's a dude that gets, you know, hunted down by a tiger. And I'm like, but yeah.
I have a few similar ones on that recommendation. I'll send them to you. You'll like that. If you like that, you'll like this one. Night of the Grizzlies is another one. Very similar.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a snapshot of the inside of my head. It's just like getting stuck into random topics.
I do that on YouTube. I'll fall down rabbit holes of airline pilots or like people traveling on a train across Russia or people like renovating a property, and I'll just go down. I burst my eardrum during the summer and I was just watching these things about building patios.
There you go.
It's like, yeah, I'll just keep watching this. My wife kind of walked through and she was like, what are you watching?
This
guy's making his own patio.
Yeah.
She was like, oh, Jesus. Right.
Yeah. Okay. So the book, actually, that's what I was saying. I wanted to provide that for people that would never get anywhere near running a coffee shop, but are interested in the bits in it, you know?
Because if I do this podcast, like every business is interesting.
Yeah.
If the person behind it is interesting.
Yeah.
Because it's just how they think. And I love people that have like yourself, who have like a passion and a craft, because it's getting rarer and rarer in the world that people are actually pursuing this thing. It was like me and my wife are having this thing about like what we want our daughter to do. She's only 2. I was like, as long as she's passionate and pursues it with every inch of her being, I don't really mind.
Just be interested.
I'm like, I don't really mind as long as she is just has a passion. I think passion gets extinguished so much. Mm. Like kids are just so passionate about everything. You see it go through school and this gets extinguished out of you. You can look back to yourself going, oh yeah, they were like, oh, be sensible and do this and the other.
Yeah. Like I think I've learned that lesson a lot earlier. It'd be a lot easier for all of us, I suppose. But like it's, I definitely, like when I started off in this, I did business and legal studies in UCD and then I got a job in finance in trustee, which is like their kind of regulation side of investment funds. So like analyzing, you know, retrospective data from funds, so not even the sexy buy and sell bit, it's the stuff that's already
happened.
And like, you know, the suit and the job, the window, and just be like, I hate this, just because I felt like this is what I should be doing, you know. But my first job was 15, was working at McDonald's in Grafton Street, and in those days, this is before mobile phones, now I'm showing my age, but like if you were meeting your friends in town, you had to meet at a place because you couldn't just go into town and call them or text them, you know.
Yeah.
So everybody met at McDonald's Grafton Street. And it was just like, that place was crazy busy. And I remember I was 15 years old and they put me on the till. And someone comes up to you and you have these 30-second interactions with people. And sometimes you'd mess it up and then next person you get on really well with it. But it was just fleeting. They're there and then they were gone. And I just loved it. And the feeling that if you stood still for 5 seconds, it would all fall apart because it was so busy. And that buzz of it was amazing. And
scratched that part of your brain. It scratched that part of your entrepreneurial brain.
Yeah, and the weird thing is all the way through university and college, I was always working in restaurants, bars and cafes. And I loved that hospitality thing. And that was what I was passionate about. And it was all in pursuance of getting a proper job. And then you get the proper job and you're like, I hate this.
I'd figured it out when I was 15.
Yeah.
Why didn't I just keep going and doing that?
So like I remember sitting down with my parents because I knew they come from like working class backgrounds and they've put everything into my education and trying to support me and my brother and my sister. And I didn't want them to think I was going off the edge, you know? And I'm like, so I sat them down and said, look, I'm going to take a year. And I'm going to try and do something in this space because it's what I want to do. And if it doesn't work out, I'll just go back and get my job back. You know, there's no risk here, you know. Like in those days, like people would they go to Australia for a year and they come back and they'd be given a bonus for coming back to their old job. That's how things were. So I said, I'll give it a year. And a year to the day after I started working as a barista, I finished 4th in the World Barista Championships.
Okay.
I was like, right, I'm going to do this. And it was like the first time I ever felt like I was good at something, you know what I mean? And it was just, I was lucky because I was passionate about it. Sometimes people are passionate about stuff and they're not good at it. I have enough things I'm passionate about that I'm not good at.
Oh, I have tons of them.
Yeah, yeah.
I have an endless list of those.
Seriously, yeah, yeah.
No one's ever going to pay me for that.
Yeah, but it came together and it was just like, I couldn't believe how lucky I was. I was like, this just feels brilliant, you know?
The brain and the world is funny. How you, like a year to the day, there's something there, like manifestation, visualization, call it whatever you want, but there's something there.
Oh,
when listen. You set the brain, you go, okay, brain, here's what we're doing.
Yeah, yeah.
The brain's
mad.
Like, okay, Gary, off we go.
But even that day, the 5th of December, like I left my job in investment funds on the 5th of December. We started roasting on the 5th of December. We've opened, like not by pure chance, we've opened a few, like I think like four of our shops have opened on the 5th of December.
That's weird.
Like it's, I opened a business, a dog grooming business with one of our ex-staff and we opened that on the 5th of December and it just keeps coming up that date, you know, so. Every year I'm like, what's going to happen?
The world is funny. Like world, like there's definitely a friend of mine, Yvonne, she's a manifestation podcast and like she is just adamant about it. And like the more I've kind of gone into it, I'm like, you're definitely into something here. There's definitely like when you put it up on the board and you write it down, whereas when you like, you do your goals, you close the book and you never look at them again.
Yeah.
Whereas when you see it and you go, right, this is what we're doing. And you have a deadline.
Yeah.
You have a hard deadline.
I would believe in a lot of that. I wouldn't go to the extent that like if you just write stuff down on the wall, it's going to happen. Like it doesn't.
Oh no, you have to action. But if you see it every day going,
it definitely
right,
focuses
I have 12 months to make this shit happen. If I don't make this happen in 12 months, something happens. There is consequences to my action. Not like red Lamborghini.
Yeah.
Not like that. But like when you have like clear, decisive actions.
Yeah.
Clear, decisive goals followed by actions. Like it's just, it's, there's a power there. Something else comes into the world.
Yeah.
So how are you thriving? In this kind of brings me nearly full circle because how are you thriving? Because you made a point there about no one's going to interview six-year-old restaurants, right? But now you've got 8 of these outlets all across Dublin.
How are we? I feel like I should be able to explain this better. I think like there's good balance to what we do. So we've like, we supply wholesale coffee to restaurants and bars and cafes. And like that in itself is difficult because I think like increasingly so, like we find it, I think increasingly difficult to, let's say, pick up wholesale customers in Dublin because the more 3FE shops there are in Dublin, the more they want to have a point of difference, you know?
Okay.
So I'm like, okay, I get that. But then we still have a lot of very strong ones here as well, you know? Then like we have the online retail, like so coffee subscriptions are massive. So people just getting a bag of coffee a week is a huge thing for us. And then we sell equipment, so espresso machines, grinders, the shops themselves, like I think, like it's weird, like a lot of shops or restaurants or bars, something they open with a bang and they spend a fortune open with a bang and then they kind of like,
yeah,
it kind of quieten down over time. Ours are kind of the opposite, like we kind of like just open up quietly and they build over time. So, you know, it's like, they tend to get busier as the years go on. And I think it's probably around the attitude that we have is just like just doing the simple things well and trying to keep things simple and not really panicking, I suppose, just trying to focus on what you have. Like if you have a customer, like focusing on that customer is a much better way to get another customer. Like you can go chase the guy who just walked past the door, but the guy who's sitting in the cafe is going to be ignored. You know what I mean? Like it's...
That's a big one. That's a big one. Always chasing the next, whereas... A friend of mine pointed out that to me recently, he's like, oh, so I was chasing the next. And then he realized, like, I have 10,000 people on a database and I'm doing nothing with them. I was like,
they'll find you customers.
Most people are doing that. Like, most people are always chasing the next. There's this, like, incessant, like, human nature to find the new and the next. Whereas, like, if you cater to, like, it's like the 1,000 true fans thing of, like, find 1,000 people who are just obsessed by your stuff.
Yeah.
And that will sustain.
Just, focusing on those things all the time. Like, I think it's most of the work, you know, and it's easy to like, sometimes you panic and you're like, oh, we should be doing this, we should be doing that. Like, and it's just doing the everyday stuff. Like so much of our business is just everyday. Like it can get quite boring sometimes. It's just like coffee is an everyday product. People drink it every day. We have customers that come every day. So the prices need to be everyday prices. The calorific content needs to be everyday, you know, something you can eat every day. You know, it's like, it's eggs and toast, you know, it's muesli, and the price points need to work. It's like the feel of the place, you know what I mean? Like I mean don't get me wrong, like I go to these, like go travel, like I was in Dubai last month, or go to States, or you go to these places and they have like million euro fit outs and they look incredible, And they go, my friend was like, would you love to have somewhere like this? I was like, nope. But I want to have somewhere that people feel like they can just walk in off the street and not even, there's no sharp intake of breath. It's like, it's like when you open the doors, it's not yours anymore. It's theirs. It's for everybody, and everybody can just come in, feel welcome. And you have to choose the materials and the decor and the vibe. It, like, there's so many things about it that need to be considered to achieve.
They're so tangibles that make the intangible.
Yeah.
It's like you went somewhere. I was saying to you about Rise at the Cove. I go there all the time. I'm like, and I go, I just feel good there.
Yeah.
Like, there's, as you said, there's so many different elements to it. It's the staff, it's the fit out, it's because it's a social enterprise, it's where it is, it's all the memories I have there.
And you can go there every day.
But that's it.
And it's hard. You need to understand that, I think, as well.
How have you not chased fads then? Because that is...
Oh, we have. Don't get me wrong. There's definitely mistakes you've made. And you do, like, when you look back, if at photographs of 3FE, it's definitely changed over time. But that's like... It's easy to look back over 15 years or 10 years or whatever and say, oh, we planned to do this and then this is how we went. And like, I think people that run businesses are guilty of this all the time. But realistically, what happens is you set something out and then the market decides and you adapt and you change and you adapt and you change. Now, definitely you can stick to your principles, but like it's easy to look back and think the line is very linear, but like you move around and things change all the time. You try things that do work, try things that don't work. And like, I remember having a conversation with one of the staff and they're like, oh, why did you design this shop to this way? This isn't working very well. It's like, well, the way it was before worked the way it was. And then we needed to change the design because then we started to do this and this, and this didn't work anymore. And that became a bit of a fad. So people didn't want it anymore. So now you have to do it this way. And or this new piece of equipment came aboard and that worked and it got us to this level. And now it doesn't work anymore. So now we have to do it again.
Yeah.
So like, I do all the designs and all the shops, just do it all myself. And like, trying to do it in a way that like is approachable, is simple, and kind of like helps people, the workflow and all that kind of work in a very simple way is really, I mean, I should probably be hired an architect, but it's really difficult, but really interesting as well. I think that's like, there's so much in that, you know.
How do you stay out of your comfort zone?
I have a comfort zone. I don't know, like, I was listening to one of your podcasts the other day and you were like, what do you do to relax? And I was like, what if you asked me that?
Well, we're getting there. Don't worry, we're going to do like, business, body, brain. We're getting there.
Stay out of my comfort zone. I'm not that sort of person. I don't know. I don't like, if I go on holidays, I can't lie on the beach. I hate saunas. Massages are hell. You know,
Are you a restless person?
Yeah, but not in a kind of like, I'm not like running around screaming like in people's ears all the time around like that. I'm just...
You're not the Gordon Ramsay coffee?
No, not at all, no. I think most people that work with me don't take me seriously, but it's like...
So how do you look after yourself then? How do you mind? So I talk about body, business, brain, because I think, you know, if you have success in one, but the other two are on fire, then really what's the point? So how do you look after yourself then?
I run quite a bit. Yeah, I do a lot of running. That only really started about 10 years ago now. And I used to play a lot of ball sports when I was younger, like football and rugby, basketball. And I look at people running and go, what are they doing?
I think we all do that though.
Where's the ball? How do you win?
Like, I always found running so boring.
Yeah.
Because I always used to, like, I need to be stimulated. And I'd be like, oh, I couldn't do it to 10K. I'd be off my rocker by the end of it. I think it's old age and maturity.
Yeah. I've had a cold that's dragged on now for a few weeks. And I haven't ran in like 3 weeks. And I'm just like, itching to get out. I have this run that I've done. We run up and down the Dodder Greenway, and there's a route you can do from, I've forgotten the name of the mountain, but like up near Loch Bray in Wicklow, where the start of the Dodder.
Okay.
And you can run alongside the Dodder all the way down to Grand Canal Dock.
No way.
Yeah. And most of it is protected from the roads, like all the way through Knock Line to like Cherryfield.
Oh, class.
Down the back of Milltown. Like, there's parts where you have to cross the roads or move in a little bit, whatever, but like, and it's about 25K, I think.
Ooh, chunky.
Yeah, but it's all downhill. So I've got that one screened out. How I got into running, actually, I ran 10K for the first time. And then with a mate of mine. And then we ran 15K. I was like, God, this is amazing. I love this. And he lives in Naas. So we were running along the canal. And I was like, where does this go? And he was like, I don't know. So of course, at home, down the rabbit hole. I realised that it goes to the Shannon. So essentially the border of Galway. And I think 6 weeks after that, we hired a camper van, got a mate to drive the camper van. And we ran from Grand Canal Dock to Galway. All along the It was like 160 kilometres in 4 days.
Did you do the Grand Canal or the Royal Canal?
The Grand Canal.
Yeah.
The Royal Canal has been taunting us since. That's our next one to do.
I've sailed the... Not sailed. True.
Barged.
Barged. I don't know. I never knew the word, right? I'm not a boat person. We barged from Athlone to Grand Canal.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's class.
The best bits are like the old towns, you see, that used to be these like centres of industry where like... Where all the farms and bogs and everything would supply them into these huge warehouses and they're all boarded up.
Because the canals used to be the centre, right? Canals, yeah. Everything used to go up and down the canals. So like you're going through these really interesting places. It's kind of sad in a way because like it was so quiet.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Like we'd be tipping along, silence, no one around you, just this beautiful canal. But you wouldn't see anything or anybody. Yeah. It's like they're not utilized really. It's getting better, I think, but like it's
yeah,
such
all the
a resource.
Greenway paths are much better now. When we did it, it was like 2013, I think. So it was like a lot of it was like overgrown, climbing over fences and stuff.
Yeah.
It got a bit. You have to know which side of the canal to run on or else you're in trouble. But yeah, it was amazing. There's a bit outside Burr where it's like it's raised above the ground either side and you're like sunny day and we're just. Like
it's incredibly peaceful. Like,
yeah.
So do you think
that's how I relax?
You run,
just do weird stuff
to look after your body. What about your brain?
I go to the gym as well. I have a PT. He's great, Nick Hogan, and he's like, he's one of those PTs that like you come in, he look at me and go, yeah, we're taking it easy today. I'm like, what? And he's just, you know, you're not there to kill yourself. You're there to, he's like, I suppose like we're saying, like every you're here to come all the time.
Yeah.
Just do what you can. If you're feeling good, go for it. If you're not, just do some stretches. You know. So I think that's important with that kind of stuff because it's you need to keep going back, you know. So that's most what I do.
And then outside of work, in terms of managing your brain, mental health, how do you manage that?
I was never a huge drinker now, but like I wasn't a good drinker though, you know what I mean? It's like if I had too much to drink on a Saturday, I'd feel it until Wednesday or Thursday, you know. So I don't really drink anymore. I think just like Fierce Mild is a shout out to those guys. Like that's great.
What's that?
It's a non-alcoholic beer, but they make it with a yeast that doesn't produce alcohol rather than de-alcoholizing it. So this yeast just doesn't produce
Fierce
alcohol.
Mild.
Yeah.
And I said that all the time. And when I got together, my wife, she's in Dublin. She's like, what the
It's a contradiction
to that.
But it's incredible. It's as a standalone beer, regardless of whether it has alcohol or not, is delicious.
I don't do that. Like, I don't really drink either. I can't remember the last time I drank, but I just couldn't be arsed with all the non-alcoholic stuff.
This stuff's great.
Sparkling water with a lime, please.
That one, Athletic Brewing do a good one. And I'm trying to think who else. There's Implosion by Tool or Tool, I think they're called. That's good. I've been through them all.
It's interesting that non-drinking trend that is getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yeah. I mean, coffee shops benefit from it as well. Like,
for sure, right?
But even like the young people that we'll have a staff party this week and like we'll get them a few, you know, slabs of beer and half of it will be left behind. They just don't drink the way they used to, you know.
But it's a lifestyle thing. Like you talked about there about your the weekends, like run clubs and stuff like that. Ben loves a good run club. It's different, right?
Yeah.
It's a different world. So you read and you do other stuff like that outside of that. Is there anything else you kind of do to kind of keep mentally sharp outside of like switching off? I think you've answered the question. You don't really switch off, but is there anything else you do?
I'm trying to think. Yeah, I love a road trip. Do a bit of cycling. Not very good at that. It's weird with cycling. I'm good at the uphill. I hate the downhill. Just like the opposite to everybody else. I'm like going uphill, like my legs are burning. I'm like, this is class.
Psychologists listening are going,
I can tell you why.
Maybe
some of us love the misery, you know. But
I sent that gif. I use that all the time. Yeah, I use Mrs. Doyle. I mainly could communicate in gifs and definitely Father Ted gifs. It's like he was complaining about his business and I was sending him that. I was like, maybe it's you.
Yeah.
Maybe you're the problem.
But I'm burning the brakes all the way down the hill and on the far side. Outside of that, like, I mean, yeah, going to... You know, I probably don't do it nearly as much as I'd like to. But like, most of my time I spend with my wife and my kids. That's like, I just chill out with them. And like, I think I've got a really great relationship with my kids. Where like, I like just hanging out with them. You know what I mean? I think for a while I felt this pressure to enroll them in like 20 different activities and just drive them around. And I
was that,
like,
seems to be the trend, yeah.
Yeah, and I was like, you know, it's they need to rest and chill out. And They've had the misfortune of being introduced to Monty Python recently as okay. well. So,
what age are they?
7, 10, 12. So yeah.
Nice. Okay. Yeah,
so they're lots of going around the house at the moment. So
you've made a rod for your own back.
Yeah, seriously.
What's kind of like the plan here? I know you don't make big detailed plans, but like you're opening your 8th. What's kind of the next 12 to 24 months looking like for you?
Yeah, like we've got a new website launching soon. So we're moving on to a Spotify Plus platform. We've had a few iterations over the years. So this is like moving on to Spotify Plus is, you know, it's a big thing for us and hopefully solves a lot of problems for us. So that's going to be a big thing. Definitely more growth internationally. I think it's going to be, it's been very organic. Like we get an email from like a shop in, I don't know, Prague, and then they'll buy some coffee off us, and then some shop in Bratislava will go, oh, that looks good, and they'll buy some, and it's all very organic, and we don't do trade shows, we don't do any like cold calling. I always remember a lecture of mine talking about the difference between like a pull brand and a push brand.
Yeah, it's powerful. It's cool.
Yeah, and I think that's, I feel like a burden about that. It's like trying to retain that thing where you're, I think when you go chasing people, it changes the conversation, you know. And more like even with like the guys who are doing social media, I'm just like, just present what we do, just tell people what we do. And if it's interesting, they'll come. That's enough. You don't need to be hounding people, you know? So, so that's, I suppose, a big growth area for us. And like, I have like, I mean, I'm not saying it's the wrong way. I mean, I wish it was this way sometimes. We're going to roll out 10 shops this year or something. I have no idea if it's going to be 1 or 50, honestly. It's just sometimes, like, we're always looking at stuff, and if it feels good, we'll do it. If it doesn't, we won't.
I like that. That's refreshing.
Yeah, no, like, sometimes, it's like this with everything, where I'm like, is this how you do it? Like, I have no idea.
Yeah, but you're making decisions based on instinct and gut, as opposed to, like, some plan you stuck up on the board that you feel like you must do.
But also competence as well. Like, sometimes I'm like, oh, let's do this, and I look around, and the team are like, ugh, and I'm like, okay, let's just take a breather, you know? I know that, you know, and I've learned that lesson the hard way. Like, sometimes I can be like hard to work with, I'm sure, sometimes. Like, I can be a bit flighty or impulsive at times. And I think, like, sometimes people are just like, oh, here, listen, I've had enough of this, and off they go. And you're like, okay, I need to calm this down a little bit. So
that's the entrepreneurial brain, though. Like, what makes you good also can be your superpower can be your super weakness, too, though, I think.
Yeah, I think that about everybody.
Yeah.
Like, I think for everybody, regardless what you do, like, your greatest strength is your greatest weakness. Like, we've people who like are incredible because the business runs off them because they can do the same thing over and over and over and over again the same way, which is so important with coffee, like in making coffee or roasting coffee or even packing boxes, like just doing it the way it's supposed to be done over and over again. And then you come along like, okay, we've got this new way of doing things, and they're like, what new way, what? And there's like blood coming out of their ear thinking about it, and they just don't want to change anything.
Yeah.
So it's the same, it's two sides of the same coin, you know. And I think, like, definitely I've learned over the years that the things that have made me successful are, I feel really careful of as well, you know, because you can unravel yourself, you know. So I think knowing when to stop, I think, is important.
I think that's one of the greatest lessons, is like, self-destruction is the most common downfall of all businesses. It's not,
smarter people than me have burnt bigger businesses. Like,
I find it so funny, like, when people obsess about the economy and Trump and Putin, and you're like, focus on yourself. It's never those things that are going to take you down. It's you having a mental brain fart and doing something absolutely ridiculous that brings you down, not these external factors. People are obsessed with external factors, and in reality, it's you. You did it. You brought yourself down by all these impulsive decisions.
Tie yourself up making plans and projections and all that, and then like a quarter of the year's gone, you haven't done anything, you know what I mean? So there's a lot of that. But I think, like, definitely I was very thankful for like the staff that we have like in COVID, because like, I don't know what it looked like from the outside, but when you're in hospitality working in COVID, you had to change everything, like sometimes on a daily basis. Everything was changed. It was indoors, it was outdoors. You couldn't do this, couldn't do that. These are new rules there. And it was just constant change. And okay, we're going to start doing this, we're going to start doing that. And it was, and having people around you just going, okay, I just did it, was just like, that was incredible. Just, and I think we learned a lot that, like, I mean, touch wood, you figure it out. Show up, you'll just figure it out.
It's like the thing, hire for attitude. You can teach confidence, but hire for attitude.
Yeah, you know, we're definitely blessed. Like, this, the team we have, they police it themselves as well. Like, people say, oh, like, how do you get such great staff? I'm like, they do it. Like, they create an environment that it's easy for people to come into, and they police each other and they support each other, and they want it done the right way. And if there's a problem, they'll ask questions. And it's like, we're really blessed with that, you know.
We're going to do our quick fire round.
You know, I listened to you doing this. I was like, oh, I should, you know, come up with some answers. And then I just didn't.
So don't, because I'm actually going to change up the questions, because I recently I'm like, oh, everyone's listening now and people know what I'm going to ask, and they come up with some sort of wishy-washy heal the world answer. I'm like, that's not what I want. Yeah, I want something that's going to annoy people on TikTok. That's what I want.
Yeah.
What book would you recommend every founder read?
Oh, every what book? Every, I think every founder needs to know what to do when a tiger hunts you. So maybe The Tiger. But aside from that, okay, it's a really cheesy book, and it's probably the only business book that I'd go back to. It's a book called Getting to Yes by Fisher and Urey.
Oh, okay.
It's about negotiation and about the idea that, like, there's an answer here somewhere that will suit everybody. And I think that's when you're running the business, like, it's, and I'm not talking full blown, like, pull your hair out conflict, but there's conflict at every turn, like with suppliers and contractors and staff. And, you know, it's trying to do something that, and sometimes, like, there's a book called, you know, whatever, Don't Split the Difference or something. It's the same sort of thing. It's like, the worst thing to do is to just say, well, like, you have that half and I'll have this half. You know, it does, you can outthink the problem. That book is brilliant, like, getting to the root of what actually, you know, people's interests rather than their positions. I think that's an invaluable one.
Psychology is really mostly a part of, that's the biggest part of business, really.
Yeah.
Your own first.
Oh, so much. It's dealing with people. So
you're managing your own psychology. And then when you manage that, you can kind of have a better inclination as to what other people are doing.
Yeah.
We're a rational beast, like we talked about earlier outside. What's something you'd learn the hard way?
What didn't you learn the hard way? Definitely, yeah, like that problems scale faster than solutions. That's like, you talk to people all the time, like, oh, we're going to roll out this many shops, or we're going to take on this many staff. And I'm like, careful now. Like, it's the small problems become huge problems. And yeah, that will never not be true.
I like that. Problems scale faster than solutions. What have you sacrificed to achieve your success?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, it's a funny question. Like, I could say definitely sacrifice friends and time with family. Like, but I remember when I wanted to open, and I had a job offer in Norway with this really, really cool coffee shop there.
In Norway?
Yeah, in Random. Bergen. Friend Rasmus had a place there. I can't pronounce it. It's like Coffee Machine, I think is how they pronounce it. Beautiful city, beautiful shop. Like, what they're doing was incredible. And he was like, come work for me. And I was like, oh. And then had a few people in the States that I knew that were doing really, really interesting stuff. And then some friends in London are doing some really great stuff. But Dublin didn't really have anywhere that was really focusing on like kind of that kind of specialty coffee stuff. And I didn't have any kids. I didn't have any, I wasn't married at the time. I had a girlfriend who's now my wife. And I had no responsibilities, no mortgage. And I was like, oh, well, I remember sitting there with my dad and I was like, well, like, what do you, and I had the option to open the Twisted Pepper, and I was like, but like, it's a nightclub, like, and that's like, it's tiny and all that. And he was like, okay, well then don't do that. And I was like, but I want to open a shop in Dublin. And he goes, well then do it. I was like, but there's this job in Norway. And he goes, well then do that. I'm like, but then I won't be able to open the shop. And then, you know, Yvonne's will be here and I'll be there, because she was in college. And we're going around in circles. He was like, Colin, there's always a consequence. There's always a consequence. And it's like, so it's easy to say, oh, like, what have you sacrificed? And I don't get me wrong. I'm not saying like, oh, just burn all your mates and go pursue your business. Don't do that either. But like, there is always a consequence. So like, if I have friends because I have a business, you know what I mean? And I lost friends because I started the business. But I don't think you could, it's easy to beat yourself up and be like, oh, this is all the things I sacrificed. And definitely things were sacrificed, but things were gained as well, you know? I think I'm very lucky and I'm content where I am. And I think things went well and things went badly. And here we are, you know.
I like that. There's always a consequence. It's like just do a pros and cons list. You're never going to get 10 out of 10 across the board. It's like when you're buying a house or whatever, you can have your wish list and you're like, okay, we're going to get maybe 6-7 out of these.
Mm. It's the same. I think people are open coffee shops and they're like, or even what we do is, and the staff are giving out to me like, oh, this doesn't hurt. I'm like, but like, whenever you're designing a coffee bar or a layout, there's always a compromise.
Yeah.
Something is going to go wrong. Something's not going to work. So it's like, very often it's like, pick your poison. What can you live with going wrong?
Perfectionism kills everything.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Trying
yeah.
to get it perfect, because there is no perfect. And it's like you said this way back in the conversation, like, you'll figure it out as you go along.
Yeah.
You're not going to know, because you don't know what way. If I put that there, this happens over here, and then actually the customers go that way. Just get on with it.
Yeah.
Just get on with it.
Yeah.
Enterprise Ireland helps to support and fund a vibrant startup ecosystem, providing supports, insights, and network connections to the most ambitious Irish startups. From expert advice to raising funding, exploring opportunities in international markets, to strategic planning, Enterprise Ireland is here to support you in those important startup moments. For more information about how Enterprise Ireland can support you on your startup journey, visit enterprise-ireland.com. Enterprise Ireland, helping Irish startups go global.
What would you do today if I give you 10 million euro?
What would I do today for 10 million euro? I wouldn't know what to do with 10 million euro. I don't know. Like someone was saying to you recently, would you go and raise some money? I was like, I wouldn't know what to do with it. Like, I enjoy the pace we're going at and figuring stuff out.
And that's the age old advice of go and raise money and give up all the freedom you've built over the last 15 years. Yeah. Would you go and get lost? So 10 million, give me an answer.
10 million. Are you talking like actually just giving it to me personally?
Whatever you want, you can do. It's now yours. I've slid the... we'll call it a briefcase of money across the table.
I'd pay off
anything.
Debts and mortgages for friends and family, absolutely. And then this is for me now. I'd get a lockup, and in the lockup, I would buy a load of cars. And I'm not talking like GT3s or Ferraris or anything. I'm talking like weird stuff like Gen 1 Espaces and like, I don't know, like old kind of Range Rovers, you know, and like Minis, and just like odd cars, like convertible Nissan Micras. And I'm mad about like just weird cars.
Okay.
I don't know why. That's, I'd do that.
Do you have the lockup, just all these weird
just
cars?
The weirdest, like, just, you know, like a Ford Fiesta with, you know, 100 miles on the clock or something. Like,
right,
just,
okay. All
just
right.
Mad that's, stuff like that.
We all have our hobbies, right?
Yeah. I feel like I should give you a better answer than that. But that's,
well, I've got a follow up. It's if I give you 1 million euro today and you can invest it in one person or one company, not yourself, who is it?
God. Like if it was just to make money, I would say I would invest it in Shopify. Yeah. I think that's a good business and it's going to go strong. So if it's just for money, it'd be that. If it was one person, or I would, like we do a bit of this anyway, but like I'd go to the people that are working with us and see if anyone wants to set up their own business, and it gives them a leg up. And I think that's actually might be what I should probably do with the 10 million. I think there's a space in every city and around the world and for like, you know, big business doing things at scale, and that's all great. And I love that kind of stuff as well. You know, I'll go and eat my lunch and Five Guys or, you know, Shake Shack, whatever, and that's great. But then there's a space for people that are owner operator restaurateurs or coffee shop owners, and we need to protect that, and pub owners as well. And we need to protect that, and we need to put more support in place for them. And like, it's not like we don't have any problems, but there's many aspects to what we do. So we've moved out of that space, but like it needs to be easier for people to get on that stepping stone, and like getting funding and the know-how and the safety net that's required for it is very difficult. So I would get a warehouse. They always do this, like, you know, these Victorian markets they want to put into like food halls and all that, like nonsense, not fit for purpose anymore. Get a massive warehouse, all right, somewhere like Sandyford, okay, I'm talking like 20,000 square feet, all right, or Glasnevin or something like that. Divide it up into cubicles, it's fit for purposes, you can drive trucks in and out of it, you can put extraction units in it. We'd put all the flooring down, the ducts, the walls, everything, and have cubicles for food businesses. And the deal is, you come in, you have the unit as long as you pay the rent, and then when you hit a certain turnover or time length, whatever, when you reach success in inverted commas, you get some of the money back that's been generated as a parachute, and off you go, do your thing.
Oh, I like it. So you graduate.
Yeah. But like, I think like an incubator, but like with an incubator with consequences, you know, like real life.
There has to be.
Yeah.
There has to be.
So if you don't pay the rent, you're gone. And it's like, but come back with another idea.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
And I was in, there was a place in Cork recently. We were away for a weekend. We had our dog with us. We bring him everywhere. And like, you kind of like, not many places you can go with your dog. So we're like, okay, where we go? There's a food market down on the Marina Market there, or
yes.
something.
It's incredible. It's incredible. Class. Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
I literally Googled, where can I eat with my dog? And it comes back and I was like, this looks unreal. So we drove down and it's right on the water.
Yeah.
Go in. It's kind of like what you talked about there.
We were there on a Tuesday morning and it was rammed.
Oh, it was class. Yeah. It was so cool because we were able to walk around. There must be like 20 or 30 outlets in it. And there's all this seating inside. We were able to bring him in. We had the buggy with us and we were able to sit in there and you could like, I could have one thing, Michelle could have another. Class.
Yeah.
I love that.
And I think like, definitely, I mean, that in itself is an enterprise and you'll have people that are in there long term and stuff. But I suppose what I would love to do is to do that. The idea that you're only here for a certain amount of time. You're here to try something out.
Yeah.
Because so many talented chefs and mixologists and baristas and stuff, and they don't have the capital to get going. Like I was, it sounds weird to say, but I was lucky because there was an absolute like economic disaster at the time. So it was quite easy to set up, you know, it was easier to get contractors and stuff. Nobody was doing anything in the city. Mm. And also somebody doing something. Like I remember we opened and El Mulligan Grocer opened in Stony Batter and they decided they weren't going to have Guinness on tap. They were just going to do craft beer.
Mm.
And we were just sending customers to each other and everybody was just like, can't believe they're doing this mad stuff and they're having a go and everybody was behind you and it was great, you know. But if it happened 3 years earlier or 3 years later, I don't think we would have.
It's funny, I'm seeing a lot of entrepreneurs who set up in COVID now.
Yeah,
I'm seeing like they're kind of coming through now because some of them might have started up 2020, 21, 22, so 2025 now. You're starting to see them come through. It's kind of cool because they're like, well, I don't need to lose.
Yeah.
And there's a real coolness to that.
It takes the pressure off, you know.
It does. I think we need to do more of that. If you were starting from zero again in 2024, what would you do?
Ooh, what would I do? I would, but aside from that food hall thing, what would I do? I'd love to do something in the space with like dairy. So obviously I travel quite a lot with coffee. So like, and you go all over the world and the quality of milk that we have in this country is incredible compared to what they have in other countries. And we really do take that for granted. And like the World Barista Championships came to Dublin in 2016 and people were messaging me, where do I get good milk? And I'm like, in a petrol station, like wherever you want. Now, like there's lots of really, is it Killadoon? I think they're called. They do really good, like kind of small batch, really interesting stuff. But like the regular bog standard stuff that you buy in Ireland is incredible. And I think there's huge opportunity to do like a high-end butter or cheeses, or I know there are great cheeses, but I'd love to do something in that space of like dairy. Yeah, maybe.
I like it. I know the head of Dairying Board BS, so if you're looking for a hookup, I'll get you sorted with Dave.
Let me finish this one first.
Dave will sort you out. He'll be listening to this going, can you just intro me to Colin there? Just have a little idea for him. What's been your worst investment?
My worst investment? Do you mean personally or in business?
Whichever you like.
My worst investment. Ooh. I don't want to, they're really good people and they're really good at what they do. So I don't want to, but it wasn't a good fit. At times I've hired professionals to elevate what we do and realize that like, no, this is, and I don't mean the quality of the product or the service. I'm talking about the aesthetic in terms of like design and materials and stuff like that. And I think when you have it at a certain level, you get that approachability and sometimes there's an urge. I think in food and in Ireland, we have this problem is that everything needs to be fancy. You know what I mean? I think in Ireland, like there's not many places you can just go for your dinner, you know, and they do that really well in Spain, France and Portugal. You know, just go to place paper cloths on the table and it's, you know, just
functional, like, but lovely.
Yeah.
And like you said, consistently good.
And your ingredients and off you go. And at times I've panicked and be like, oh no, this needs to be, I'd see something on Instagram say, oh, we need to do that. And they spend money and you go, like I've spent money on like our marketing campaigns. I paid a company once to do a marketing campaign and paid for it. And they showed it to me, and like a couple of days before, I was like, yeah, no, we're not doing it. Because it just, it was pushing us into a space where it was too fancy. Imagine going to your local for a pint and you walked in the door and somebody's like, good evening, sir, where would you like to sit? You'd be like, what? They just ruined it. You know what I mean? It was the equivalent of that. So I just, knowing what we do and what we're good at, and that space that we want to occupy, and just being approachable and being true to ourselves is really important. And every now and again, I panic and spend invest in some stuff, and I've just like been like, yeah, no, that's.
What's been your best investment?
Best investment. So I should probably have started with this. So 3FE stands for Third Floor Espresso. And so what happened was that when I got a job working as a barista, my boss, Carl Purdy, who runs Coffee Angel, he had a little Piaggio van down the river. And he was like, you should enter the Irish Barista Championships. And I was like, what? I can't do that. And he was like, no, it's a really good way to get feedback and learn from your peers. You have to do it. And the guy who won the World Championships the year before was from Ireland, a guy called Stephen Morrissey. He was working with Square Mile in London. So Carl convinced me to do that, and I entered the competition and I accidentally won it, which meant I was going to the World Championships. So Atlanta 2009, like 5,000 people in tiered seating cheering for cappuccinos, like 20,000 people watching on live streams, like bonkers.
Ah, lads, you know? That's a bit mental.
So when I won that, I was like, I had no clue what I was doing. So I sold my car and I bought the only competition spec Nuova Simonelli Aurelia espresso machine. And I stuck it into the spare bedroom in my apartment, which was on the third floor. And I built a training room, the size of this room, like built tables and had stools, and basically built it like the stage would be at the World Barista Championships, locked the door and pretended I was talking to judges, did my 15-minute routine over and over and over and over and over for weeks on end. Went to the World Championships, finished fourth in the world. But when I bought that espresso machine, I remember going like, what am I doing? I'm a lunatic. And I was talking to a mate of mine. He goes, Colin, like people like, you know, drink that kind of money, or they smash that money into a tree, or they like, they'll go on a holiday and spend that money. Like just spend the money. Like it's an investment in your future. And I was just like, oh yeah. So we did. It seemed very normal at the time once I got up and running. But yeah. So 3FE stands for third floor espresso because it was named after that third floor training room.
I love that level of obsession. That's
yeah, my
special.
Wife had a few things to say about it now as well.
No, they're the stories.
Three-phase power and water pipes running down the hallway into the spare bedroom.
They're the stories that I loved. And yeah. I'm like, oh, it's that level of obsession that it takes to do something really different. Like it's building a mock-up of a training room in your spare room because that's what it takes to be exceptional. I love that story.
It was a big relief to it because like, especially when I was like 27 and I was like at the time going like, oh, this is me. This is what I do. Like, I'm never going to be able to do and as an interest. And like, just, it's weird. Like, you're 27, you think your life's over and you're just like, and it was just the relief of just being able to just throw everything at something. It was just like, felt brilliant.
We crave that, don't we, as humans? We're searching for that purpose. We're searching for that. Why am I here?
But like, especially when you're young, just have at it. Like, go for it. Like, what's the worst that could happen?
Like, and it doesn't matter. Like, have at whatever it wants to be. It's not going to be logical.
Yeah.
It's not going to be a clear line going, oh, if you do this, you'll do this and this. That didn't make sense. Didn't make sense.
But yeah, best thing I ever did. I still have that machine. It's sitting on a rack in the roastery, and I would, like, it's this awful gaudy looking green. And I have I'd love to, I don't know, take it down and stick it in my kitchen one day if I had the space. But that's for another day.
A little shrine.
Yeah.
Final bit of advice to every entrepreneur or aspiring entrepreneur listening.
Final bit of advice. Like I talked to. I mean, I'd like to talk to more. Like, I definitely feel like it's good to help people that are coming up and all that kind of stuff. And I think the thing that I keep coming back to people all the time is just start. Like, people are looking for this, you know, perfect scenario where everything will work. And what if this? And what if that? And what if that? And I'm like, what if the roof falls in? Like, just start. Like, and I think that's it was a big barrier for me. Like, you know, like I went to university and I'm sure I did learn stuff, but like I should have just started a business when I was 17. Like, I don't know. It took me 10 years to do it. Maybe that's, I don't know. It's hard to say, like, but I think just start, you know, just do something and that'll lead to something else. And then maybe it'll crash and burn. You'll do something else, but like just start. And like, you could waste your life away just waiting for an opportunity, you know, but it's like, especially if you're young and you haven't got little ones or mortgages to pay. It's just have at it. Yeah. I think that's it. Just start.
There's never a right time. Just get going.
No. I haven't hit a right time yet, so we'll see.
Yeah, I still don't know what I want to be when I grow up. Where can people learn more about Treofi and about you?
Oh, they've probably learned enough about me at this stage. Treofi.com, yes, so we sell everything there. Like I was saying, coffee subscriptions is a big thing for us, and we can buy random stuff. And we're launching our new site soon, which should be early February. So we'll hopefully have a lot more content on there in terms of video guides and all that kind of stuff. Shops all over Dublin. I'm Dublin Barista on Instagram. No, I'm not. I'm Colin Harmon on Instagram. That was my Twitter. Get rid of my Twitter. And Treofi's on Instagram as well. Treofi Coffee. Yeah, we don't have Treofi on Instagram, actually. That's a bit...
Should get that.
Yeah, working on that one.
Brilliant. Listen, Colin, that was an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. It's great fun.